Welcome to the New Zealand Tech Podcast, presented by Paul Spain, Bradley Burrows, and guests.
Welcome to the NZ Tech Podcast. This is episode 38. You're with Paul Spain.
You got Bradley Burrows.
And Skip Parker.
Welcome along, everyone. We've got a fun little night lined up tonight. let's jump into it. All sorts of news going on. News from the US about a new book coming out on Steve Jobs. A discussion around Android revenues.
Yes.
We're talking about Linux. We're talking about some dodgy, what would you call these callers from India, Skip?
Idiots.
Ambitious.
Yeah, we've got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. So, let's dive into it. Now, first up, Apple have just released a bump to their MacBook Pro today. They've launched a new version with a couple of very, very minor update, I think, something that they do every now and then. No really major noticeable changes, but if you were buying a Mac today onwards as opposed to last week, you'll get a slightly higher spec machine for the same money, I guess.
Yeah, look, it goes from a, you know, like I think one of the ones go from a 2.2 gigahertz CPU to a 2.4 gigahertz i5 CPU.
It's 2.3 to 2.4 on for instance the 13 inch Mac Pro, so it's pretty small. I mean, there's better video in there and so on, so if you're into gaming and so on, those things are helpful. But not necessarily relevant to, you know, to a lot of users. So it depends how you're using the machine, whether that stuff's relevant. But I mean, it's good to see Apple are keeping up in terms of pushing specs, because you know, we have seen situations, you know, sometimes with Apple where they'll have a machine available maybe for, you know, nearly a year in terms of period. The price stays exactly the same. And gets really out of whack with what other vendors are offering. So, you know, here, yep, the price stayed the same, but they have given a bit of a feature, a performance update and so on. Brad, we were chatting a little bit earlier around the deals that Microsoft have been doing with the likes of HTC, Samsung, the various vendors that are selling Android tablets and smartphones. Those deals now sort of now cover what the majority of Android devices now sold. The deal is that Microsoft are getting a getting sort of a revenue on every one of those sales. Is that right?
Yeah, look, so basically I think they announced another one today, and they're pretty much getting from, I'll get this right, they're getting 55% of royalties from the Android ecosystem that exists out there. Which, when you consider how big Android is, because it's pretty much the...
They're not getting 55%. No, they're 55% of the...
Android market.
Of the Android products being sold, they're getting their small cut on it, which is whatever it is, $5, $10, $15, we don't know, because that's all kept under, you know, strict non-disclosure agreements.
Yeah, but what it is that the ecosystem that makes the Android devices, or does it, they've get out of that. They're getting out of 55% of those, giving royalties of some denomination back to Microsoft, which is huge. And I mean, I was just looking at it today. I mean, I think it's Inventec have been the latest one to sign the royalty agreement with Microsoft around it. I mean, it's a massive area of money when you consider how big Android is now. Mm. I mean, whether we like it or not, they are just killing iPhone as in the size of the market. They're killing Windows Phone. You know, they are the dominant player.
So what's going to be the impact of this? Is this going to push up the price of the phones? Is it going to bring, you know, what's going to be the impact? Or is it just going to be that, you know, Microsoft are earning something for whatever technologies of theirs is supposedly, or patents have been built into Android? Yeah. What's that story?
I mean, basically, it's that lovely word patents again, whereas they have used some of the licensed patents that Microsoft apparently had. Google, when they built the operating system, or particular manufacturers have added these this functionality in and used Microsoft patents, and they've got to pay some licensing revenue to it. Whether it means the phone goes up, that goes up to each individual manufacturer or designer. I haven't seen anything out in the market where the prices have increased. I mean, the thing with Android handsets is that they are cheaper, and I'd hate to see them go up personally. I think a lot of the time I'm hoping that the manufacturer just wears the cost. I mean, it's from what we heard, and this is the rumor, is it's only $5 or $6 on some, and maybe $15 on another. So I'm hoping it doesn't push it up.
It probably won't, because the cost of the components to make the handsets is coming down, right? So as that comes down, you know, that will probably cover for it anyway. So, although I don't imagine there's a huge amount of money being made on selling these things. So, yeah.
No, it's interesting. I was just looking at, so Microsoft gets licensing revenue. This is from a website, Tom's Hardware. If you want to know where it's come from, they get licensing from Samsung, HTC, Acer, ViewSonic, Onico, General Dynamics, Velocity Micro, Winstrom, Quantum Computers, Copal, Invitec at the moment around Android.
Yeah, so there's
a huge amount.
There's a fair chunk of vendors that are paying the money. Interesting. All right. That leads us on to a completely non-Microsoft topic, Steve Jobs and his biography. That book's gone on sale today, I believe.
Yes.
So it's been written by or put together by Walter Isaacson, who is a pretty major author out there in terms of doing bios. I know he's written them on guys like Benjamin Franklin, Albert Einstein. So yeah, he's covered some pretty key figures in the past. And I mean, in this case, this is an authorized biography. So Steve Jobs spent a lot of time with him, opened up, and there were a whole bunch of interviews. I think maybe in the direction of 40. Or so that were carried out over the period of a couple of years, as well as talking with, you know, other related parties such as, you know, his colleagues and rivals, you know, friends and family and so on. So quite a detailed and well-researched biography from all accounts. Have you guys caught up with some of the details that have come through about that bio?
I have, yep. Look, Steve Jobs is a genius. Bottom line, he's just a technology genius. But the way that certain passages, paragraphs, chapters have been written about him, he wasn't a overly nice man from what the extracts we're getting. Now, remember, this is we haven't read the book, so these could be pulled out of context.
Yeah.
But I think the key thing is that where they're going through and they've highlighted particular areas was he was pretty... what's the word I'm looking for? Driven's not the right word. He was very arrogant, demanding, perfectionist with his staff, but just even people he interacted with. And they have a story around where he's talking with a waitress there in a Starbucks, and apparently he just tore her apart just because the coffee cup wasn't presented in the right way. And it was a common thing to see Steve Jobs tearing people apart because he was a perfectionist. Now, rightly or wrongly, it's just the way his human interaction was, maybe wasn't a strength like we saw on a stage. But the other flip side of that is obviously his absolute hatred of what Google became, because he felt that Google stole the iPhone, was statements that he made. His relationship with Eric Schmidt, who used to be on the Apple board, had completely deteriorated to the point where there was threats of, you know, we need to kill them, crush them, buy them out, and all this sort of stuff. And he was trying to sort of say, we've got this much money in the bank, we could buy Google. This is a few years ago. And also, so there was, he really flipped. And when you were on his bad side, man, you didn't want to be in the firing line.
Because we knew that this was kind of the case with the pre being fired from Apple,
correct,
Steve Jobs, that he was arrogant. That's the reason why he was fired.
Yeah.
People just couldn't get on with him. It was hard to deal with, and he was also just a little bit fly-by-nightish and arrogant, as you say. But are you saying this is also post as
this
well?
This is way post. This is way. And look, you know, I haven't been the biggest fan, and even since our last show, I've actually been doing a lot more reading and watching. And if you're into really knowing about computers and you want to do some stuff, do some research on the internet around the homebrew computer clubs, which started up and where they started doing some stuff. Man, he was amazing. Really was a smart cookie, that guy. But he just didn't connect with a lot of people. And he was very inspirational to watch on stage, but it's just the way that the book is coming out, and these are interviews and bits and pieces. Yeah, he could be quite nasty. Quite nasty.
But I mean, if you think about the geniuses that you work with who do the IT stuff, that are real, I mean, they're really, really clever. There's not very many of the very, very clever geeky techs that actually have great social skills. I mean, this could be a bit of an over exaggeration.
No, it's
but
fair.
That you tend to get the genius complex type thing tend to get someone that's probably a little less social, or perhaps a little more direct, shall we put it that way, that they don't suffer fools easily.
No, and I mean, again, I want to be very clear to the people that are listening to the show is that we don't have the book here. I'm only reading from 6 or 7 different sites where they've,
and some snippets and so on.
Yeah,
online,
exactly.
Right?
And yeah. I want to be very clear about that. And this is reading, and then their interpretation of what's going on, and there's been talk around how they were designing, or Jobs was designing a TV, which we discussed last week, not just a monitor and a computer to become a TV, but a physical TV device, and they reckon he'd cracked it. And he was just talking with the author around that. So we've got to, I want to get the book. I think we need to give it time to digest and see what goes through. But yeah, it's interesting so far.
Yeah, no, I look forward to seeing what actually comes through there in terms of those new products. And yeah, I mean, from what I've heard, yeah, he's saying that he cracked it. He solved the thing of how to, you know, come up with a new TV that, you know, does things that our current TVs don't do. So that'll be very interesting. And I think the book will be a really good read, and you know, well worth a look. So we'll report back a little bit more on that once at least one of us has had a chance to get our head into the book and have a read ourselves. So we will come back with that on a future NZ Tech podcast episode. Now, the Linux kernel, that's had another bump along, another update?
Yeah, look, so they released the Linux kernel 3.0 back in April, and they've just done a quick update to 3.1, which, look, everyone's going, well, what does that actually mean? Two of the key things with the changes are that they can now handle the Intel's Ivory Bridge and Cider Trail chips. So what that means is that where you're running, I suppose, the latest Linux kernel on server, hardware especially, it's going to be compatible with that particular thing. And it's got a really good improved power management. Linux wasn't known for its really good having its green touch, if you like. And they've really done a lot of work, and there's been a lot of community-based work around getting the green aspect built into the kernel of doing this thing called step up, step down when the CPU's not in action, don't consume power type thing. There'll be a whole list of hundreds of other features, I'm sure, in there. But when you're going through and you're pulling through the sort of the top two ones, those for me have stood out, that they can support the newer server-based hardware. It's a small increment, but it's good to see again. April, really quick turnaround, and it's nice to see some of these newer features that we expect in modern operating systems really sort of getting pushed through the kernel.
Yep. No, definitely. You know, I think, you know, Linux will continue to improve, and it needs to. It's getting used in so many places now, from, you know, Android phones to servers to the Chromebooks from Google. You know, it really is all over the place. We're starting to see in-flight entertainment systems being Linux based. There's, you know, I think GPS units, all sorts of things. So, it's great to see that that momentum continuing along.
I look forward to that challenge.
What? Which one?
The in-flight entertainment. I have managed to crash my in-flight entertainment, see it go back to a Windows XP embedded desktop.
I've done the Penguin before. I was on a British Airways flight from London to Seattle, and it came off, and the lady goes, I'm sorry, the entertainment system has crashed this evening. We're just going to have to reboot the mainframe. And I looked at the guy next to me, who was also an IT person, and I went, cripes, I've got a mainframe on a British Airways. And then the next minute, the little Penguin came up on the side and rebooted. And I've also seen the Windows CE one as well. So
yeah,
it's interesting.
There's a certain key combination you can press, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, in New Zealand would really like us now.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not go hacking plane systems, guys. You might get into some pretty serious trouble at the other end if they don't put you in some sort of lockup before you even get there. So,
well, if they put you in a lockup in the middle of the flight, it might actually have more leg room.
First class.
Yeah.
Anyway, we digress. Hey, look, there's been some dodgy calls going around again, hasn't there, around these scamming ones?
Yeah, well, I mean, the scam calls have been going on for a while, haven't they? And there's a new one that, Skip, you've recorded in the last few days, which is one coming through Skype, which is certainly new to me. I haven't come across that before. And then there's been the ongoing phone calls that, you know, these guys that I think they're probably in India.
We think
from, you know, from what we can tell in terms of accents and other bits and pieces, are basically calling up and saying, you know, hello, sir, I'm from Microsoft, and, you know, you've got some virus or malware or something on your computer, and we're going to help you get rid of that, right?
Yeah.
And those have been going around for a while, and of course, you know, we've discussed many times the importance of keeping your password secure and not trusting people that call you. You've got to have some sort of proof of who they are, you know, many times. But we've got another recording from one of those calls, and I think it's quite entertaining to have a little bit of a listen.
Yeah, I just want to say a quick thank you to Craig for sending this through to us. We really appreciate this. It's great that you guys are sort of proactively, you know, we enjoy getting these things. They're good humour. So
encourage that of the listeners to the NZ Tech Podcast. Please keep sending things into us. We want the show to, you know, continue being driven by the things that interest the you know, those around the country who are our listeners. So please keep firing stuff through.
Okay, so let's just start off with the Skype one, which so you were sitting down at home last night, and my wife's laptop just started ringing, and we're looking at each other like, who's ringing you on Skype? No one rings you on Skype. So this is, we got a call from a caller called Notifications Alert.
Attention, this is an automated computer system alert. Urgent computer security message received. Please go to www.msgmt.com and follow instructions.
Okay. Don't go to that site.
I was just going to say, please do not go to that site if you're listening to this.
I went to that site in a hardened browser setup, and it just flipped out. So, yeah, no, avoid that one like the plague. But, yeah, that was strange. I've never had a Skype call like that come through. So clearly there's a new, I guess we talk about attack vectors, the new change in the way people do things. Skype is on the rise in New Zealand. So obviously hackers are now trying to use Skype to get through to people and try and get them onto these sites. So yeah, definitely one to keep aware of. Skype are never going to call you to say you've got problems with your computer.
In fact, no one is going to call you to say you've got problems with it. Yeah, so if you ever get that, I think we've got another call potentially we're going to play as well, which I think the gentleman on it is actually doing some really clever things. Rather than just saying, oh, what's the weather outside, he's actually challenging questions from sort of things that are happening, that if you're in New Zealand, you'd be pretty au fait with what's going on.
Yeah, so. And it is really good to, you know, is to run through those things so you can have confidence that whoever it is that's calling you, you're asking for information and so on, that you can verify it. We've talked about this before. I had a call recently from the bank, and then they started asking me to verify myself, you know, what's my birth date, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I had no way of knowing that this definitely was somebody at the bank who needed that information. So I went through that process, confirmed their details, and then I called through a published number for the bank, not a number they'd given me to say, oh, yeah, this is the bank's number, try it. So, you know, always just have that cautiousness if people start, you know, if people call you wanting information that, you know, you shouldn't just normally hand out.
That's very wise, because I've actually had that with American Express as well.
Mm.
And American Express lady was a bit shocked. She's like, I'm sorry? And I said to her, just explain to them, look, I don't know who you are, and you're asking me for personal details, so I'm going to ring you back. And if you give me a reference code, I'll call you back on that. But otherwise, I'm just going to ring you back. And they eventually accept it. So, yeah, it's definitely wise to counsel. So here's this clip.
What folder do you want me to open, mate?
So we're starting partway through the call, right?
Sorry? Who is this?
Hello?
Who am I speaking to now?
Yes, hi sir. This is Steve Wilson, and I'm the senior Microsoft certified technician.
So
typical social engineering hack there.
Yes.
Whereabouts in Auckland?
Yes, sir. We are located in Auckland.
Whereabouts in Auckland?
Sorry?
Where are you based in Auckland?
It's 297 Queen Street, Auckland, sir.
297 what?
Queen Street.
Queen, what, can you spell the street name? I'm just a little concerned because sometimes your phone line does not...
The address? Okay,
just to skip ahead a bit here.
Can you tell me what's happening in Auckland at the moment?
Sorry?
What is happening in Auckland at the moment? What is the big event happening in Auckland?
This is great.
Bearing in mind, this is just before the World Cup final.
Yes, so it's not a small event.
No, it's a pretty clear weather.
Oh, okay. And what is the big sporting event happening in Auckland right now?
Sorry?
There is a big event happening in Auckland right now. You must know it if you live there. What's happening in Auckland?
A big event happening in Auckland?
Yeah. What is it?
Calling you from the computer maintenance department, not from the sport department.
Yeah. That's brilliant. No idea.
That's brilliant.
And I mean, okay.
There's a few obvious things here, aren't there?
Yeah, New Zealand infrastructure is at times a little shaky, but it's not. I mean, telephone conversations are not that shaky.
Not across town.
No, right? Not from Auckland Central.
Look, I think we've said this 100 times. No one will really call you up and ask you for your username and password for any service. I think, like Skip said, if they do call you, call them back.
Or anything confidential, right? That you know, there's no way of verifying if someone's called you. In general, there's no way of verifying that they are who they say they are. So you're much better to call back a published number that you can find on the homepage of the website itself. Someone calls up saying they're calling from Microsoft, from ASB Bank, whatever it is, go to asb.co.nz, call that main number, tell them that's what you're going to do and that you need a call reference, etc., so you can come back to them.
Yep.
But no, that one, that was pretty entertaining. So yeah, so many factors in there, you know, the fact that we don't get a lot of people calling with such big delays. There's a whole range of things there. The fact that they, you know, kept questioning, you know, asking for the questions to be repeated and so on, and then just the way they responded to the question about the event happening in Auckland.
Now, I want to encourage the NZ Tech podcast audience. These guys are wasting people's money and lives by hacking the unwise, shall we say, and they're getting computers infected, the unwise people infected. If you have time and you get one of these calls, waste their time. Spend time and make their life a misery. Just keep them online, ask some stupid questions like this guy did, just to find out who they are, because they're desperately trying to make a sale, well, trying to make a hack sale here, shall we say. Waste these guys' time. I don't know how we're going to get rid of them, because the thing is, they're coming in from anonymous SIP, VoIP phone calls, so it's hard to track, and local telcos are not able to sort of defeat a lot of this at the moment. So let's just waste their time. If you have time and you feel like having a bit of fun, or as we like to call it, trolling them, just give them a lot of stick, you know, just keep them busy. Otherwise they're going to go and find some poor lady in Eketahuna just causing problems.
And if you can record the call and send it in to us, all the better.
And if you
thoroughly entertaining for us and for the other listeners,
the funniest one will win an award from Paul.
Excellent. All right, now moving right along. Now we were talking about banks calling up and so on. There's been this interesting use of the Kinect. The Xbox Kinect interface seen as part of a demo for internet banking. I don't know if you guys have seen that one, but it's just cool to see the new ways that people are using the Kinect to basically interact and do things before that, you know, traditionally, you know, you've had to go onto a website and do manually. What do you guys think of this one?
Does that mean someone in your lounge can swipe your money while you're working in the bank account?
That's exactly it.
So I have a different angle for you. Look, we've got a lot of really great innovation going on with the Kinect because Microsoft actually did something clever and opened up the SDK to the public, right?
Yeah.
We agreed on that one?
Yep. Yeah, no, it's cool.
I get a lot of feedback from Sony Move users that the Sony Move is a lot more accurate in what it's doing and the way it picks up the motion. I don't agree or disagree. I don't have a Move, so I can't comment. But I'm interested to see that maybe why Sony haven't potentially opened up a similar type of SDK that allows people to use the Move to develop on top of. So I think it's really cool. People are doing some cool stuff with the Kinect. But what about the other motion platforms like the Wii and the Sony Move? I mean, are we concerned that they're not developing? There's no ecosystem developing around that, or do you just think this is just something smart that they've done for Microsoft?
Well, I mean, I think it's a reflection of Microsoft and the way they operate. Is, you know, it's quite normal if they build something, they want it to be as successful as possible. They love engaging with software developers, and they love their stuff to be used in all sorts of ways, because that just helps them sell, you know, more of whatever it is.
No, I agree. I'm just
I mean, yeah, what are your thoughts, Skip? I mean, it's something I have thought of before. Why aren't these other tools being used in the same way, or are they just not as good?
You want me to use my Sony on my Sony network that got hacked to access my bank account?
Yeah, but I mean, hold on. To be fair to Sony, look, I mean, we had this conversation, I think, when we were sort of having a bit of fun with Sony a while ago. I mean, the Xbox Live network had some issues about 2 or 3 years ago. Wasn't that right, Paul? You were telling me a while ago, wasn't that? Wasn't hacked, but it was definitely had some issues.
Oh yeah, I mean, I think every platform's had reliability issues of one sort from time to time.
But I mean, just saying, I mean, as a development, I just don't see that eco. I see every day a new Kinect prototype app coming out. I don't see that ecosystem building with the Move now.
But the thing is that Microsoft have a developer community that's already there in the Windows space. Doing Windows things, all they've done is they've taken the gaming space device and giving this Windows space development community the tools to actually use it, and that's why we're seeing innovation.
No, but would you like to see the Move being used like similar ways that the Kinect's been developed on?
No, I wouldn't, because for me, I look at it and go, the interface moving forward, Microsoft are doing a smart thing, as did the iPhone, where they're actually taking away some of the limitations of interfaces, where you've got to have something in your hand or you've got to push a certain type of button. So what iPhone did is said, do away with buttons, we'll just have a touchscreen, you can create whatever interface you want. Kinect is effectively that interface for the living room, for the house, and even for potentially operating systems moving forward. So I don't think people are really going to walk up with their Move stick or their Wii remote and actually start waving it at the screen to do their bank stuff.
Because it's a physical object versus your body.
I've got to find the remote control to get to it, for starters. But if I walk into the lounge, and immediately my Kinect goes, it's Skip. Log you in, which it does now. Log you in, and then all of a sudden you can start getting exposed to all these different interfaces. Why not?
Yeah, no, I just sat back the other night, and I was, my boy was playing on a PlayStation, and then I was like, I was trying to work out, when I looked at all the cool applications that were coming out, I was trying to see whether this is going to be an enhancement for the Kinect or not, and why Sony and maybe the Wii haven't done it. Yeah, it's a fair point.
Well, I want to know how they're going to do sort of some of the security aspects, login aspects for bank details using.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's got to be really important. And face recognition or gesture recognition or even the point at different parts of a picture to log in type thing may not be enough for bank compliance.
Yep, true.
So be interested to see how it goes. I'm loving the fact that people are actually experimenting with this space and coming up with new ideas, because over time it'll become acceptable, it'll become secure. I mean, who knows? Maybe the chip in our forehead will actually kick in and...
Or the barcode on the back of my neck.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, Paul and I were in LA doing a show over there a little while ago, and there was a virtual dressing room, and I was trying to get Paul to try on a wedding dress virtually via Kinect. But what they were doing is you can actually stand there, put the dress on, do all the bits and pieces, and it was all sort of augmented reality with a Kinect device.
Yeah, it's true. I didn't try on the dress, but you looked lovely with those pearls that you put on, Brad.
And
yeah,
those big
beautiful
pumps I had too. But no, it's interesting to see. I mean, like, yeah, just no, Skip.
I think you should appreciate that you weren't there to see it, Skip. Yeah. It was it was not a sight to behold, I can assure you.
Let's move on to the next topic.
Yeah, before the show rating goes up too dodgy.
Hey, so I have something for you.
So, oh yeah,
what turned 10 on the weekend?
Oh, something. Oh, it'll be another Apple product.
Yeah. Do you know what it was?
10-10.
Come on, a major revolution. Turned the world upside down. Steve Jobs had just come back in 2001. Apple was just starting to make some money again.
He'd been back since the mid to late 90s, actually.
Official. I just read the website.
Here we go.
The iPod.
Right.
iPod is 10 years of age. Can you believe it? how much has the world changed, not just in the devices, but also the way the music industry has moved on?
Well, what technology were we using 10 years ago? Very, very different picture,
isn't it? I found an old iRiver. Yes. That had iRiver.
Creative Labs
iRiver. I had one at home, and I used to put in this really wide, was almost like a bad SD format card in there, and I had some ridiculous, and it was clunky. But isn't that amazing to think it's 10 years old? We've gone through a decade of the iPod and the way that Apple changed with iTunes and the music generation and the
click wheel.
Just everything has moved on from it. That's what the photo we're laughing about is, that they've got some quite innovative photos around where the iPod's being used in this day and age. But, I mean, you look how much things have moved on, and obviously out of the iPod came iPhone, iPads, and all the different technology sets and iOSs. So it's been a pretty major jump. I mean, I had an iPod for a little while, but, I went on to other devices. I went on to using my phone, actually.
Yeah, I mean, some of you might recall some of those devices from the likes of Creative Labs and so on. They had a Microsoft operating system that they were actually shipped with, and you know, Microsoft was playing in that space. But you know, of course, in recent years they released the Zune products over about the last 4 years. But prior to that, they had another go which wasn't very successful either, which was releasing an operating system kind of like they released Windows for PCs. They they had that software, but it didn't do very well.
Have you guys used the iCloud yet?
Yeah, I had a little bit of a play on my iPad as well, and having it sort of sync your stuff up to iCloud. So
I chose the option not to do any local syncing, everything in the cloud. Really nice. Simple, easy.
This off your US VPN account?
No.
This is straight from Kiwi land. Yeah, and it works really well.
Yeah, it's simple. Like anything Apple, you know, it's the user experience out of the box is really good. Signed up, went away. Gone next 10 minutes. I had, I think, is it three or four options you choose to get it going at the beginning? And then after that, it's pretty much everything now is in the cloud. So I think if you're out there and you're wondering whether it was going to be any good, I like it. I really like it.
Now, one of the limitations is it doesn't actually give you a whole lot of storage.
No, it's five gig off the top of my head?
It's, yeah, so
you... Or is it 25? I've got the two around the wrong way.
No.
It's 5 gig.
Yeah,
it's 5 gig, yeah.
So, and that's where we were chatting about last week. You've got, Box.net and so on, there are various gig, ones coming along and offering things like a free 50 gig worth of storage, et cetera. So, it'll be interesting to see whether Apple takes a little bit of heat there and starts offering more free storage, whereas at the moment you've got to pay if you want more storage, right?
Just on that box.net, I hear the rumours amongst a press release that they put out, they're actually bringing out the sync client for the free accounts for Windows shortly. So that'll be quite cool. So you'll be able to sync your Windows desktop with box.net as a backup device, 50 gig, free.
That's quite cool. I mean, I've been playing around with quite a different these cloud storage solutions, and so they offer everything's between 5, 10, 15, 25, 30. So the other one I've been really getting back into is Dropbox.
Yeah.
I like Dropbox.
It's quite cool.
Well, these tools are really handy. Part of the problem is, though, that they're proliferating in different directions, and so there's becoming a whole range of different things, which is actually... actually makes life somewhat harder and messier having so many tools out there, and associated security, because you don't know which one is actually, who can you trust your data with?
Yeah, I agree.
Particularly with some of the things that we've seen over the last 12 months with security issues.
Or just encrypt your data.
Yep, true.
I'd even recommend if you're using a corporate cloud-based service, which is secure, in quotation marks.
I was wondering what the fingers are doing there.
Yeah, that's right. I would still encrypt your data, especially if you're doing backup sets. Just encrypt your backup set in the cloud, even if you've got a secure service.
I'd have to say that your average computer user is not going to encrypt their data or even know how to encrypt their data. So
it needs to be done by the provider, doesn't it, in some ways? You know what I mean? Like... you need to have that level of security be handled at the back end so that my mum and dad or your mum and dad or whatever can just drag the files up there and it's simple. I can't imagine trying to explain to my poor old mum trying to how to encrypt her data.
Exactly.
Right.
And, that's a challenge. If it's not done for you, then chances are, you know, most cases, most people aren't going to do that sort of stuff.
I think it's time
manually.
For me to do a blog entry.
Okay.
All right. We look forward to that, Skip. Now, we're coming towards a close. Now, Windows Phone and Nokia, we have some news this week. Well, yes. we don't actually have the real news just yet. Although most of it has already leaked out there is the details of the new phones that Nokia will be releasing this week. So after many years of sliding in market share in terms of their smartphones, and of course Nokia, I think, is still the number one phone maker in the world, but their market share in the smartphone space has fallen sort of, you know, dramatically, particularly this year since they announced they were dropping Symbian and have been working hard on coming out with their Windows phones. So those announcements will be out over the next few days, and we'll certainly chat through with a few more details on next week's episode. Now, Skip, you've been quite excited about what Google have announced in the past few days around their mobile operating system.
Look, I would be the first to say that I'd be a bit of an Android hater. The product is so mishmash and across different brands, all the security problems that have come out, and there's just a few things that just doesn't gel with me. I've come from an iPhone to the Windows Phone 7 and I've enjoyed that.
You enjoy the slickness, whereas there's a quite a large sector of our audience that enjoys the customizability and some of those aspects of Android, right? I mean, there are a lot of guys who just love that they can tweak it this way and that way.
Now, Google is an engineering firm, and the phone has been, to date, an engineering phone. And there's been a few crowds like Samsung, possibly HTC, who have come out with some pretty good customizations around the Android and actually have made it quite a user-friendly thing. Now, recently, they released what's nicknamed Ice Cream Sandwich, which is Android 4.0. And alongside of that, they actually also released the new Galaxy Nexus, which is actually Samsung and Google's love child, shall we say. And I have to say, I think Samsung are amazing. They make some absolutely amazing hardware, and this Galaxy Nexus is also flipping amazing. So it's a dual core 1.2 gigahertz. It's got a gig of RAM on board. It's probably gruntier than a lot of people's early Windows XP PCs, to be honest. 32 gig of RAM, 5 megapixel camera. It does do full 1080 video, which is all, you know, this is all stuff that is actually becoming standard with smartphones these days. It does have a near field communications device, so this is sort of picking up RFID type things. A barometer, so you can tell how high you are. Now, the thing that really gets me excited is, for the first time, Android 4 looks like a consumer grade smartphone device. It is user friendly, the slick user interface, voice to text type things. I mean, this is on Windows Phone 7. It's now come to iPhone with Siri. So it's sort of up there with the top products now. Much more advanced and improved calendar and Gmail app integration, which it needed to. I think that just really needed to be tidied up and slicked up. It has much more improved camera, including a panoramic mode. So you can actually take panoramic photos with your phone built into the UI.
That's pretty common in a lot of phones these days already, isn't it?
Not standard. You get it with apps, but not standard. So this is sort of doing a little bit like what Apple have done and Microsoft have done, have taken some features from good apps, pulled it into the operating system. It does connect with the cloud, so it gets onto the Google stuff. Has this really interesting feature, Face Unlock. So we've seen a couple of new login services coming through. The Windows 8 had,
That sounds like what you were just chatting about with the Xbox Kinect. You walk into your lounge and the Xbox says, oh, that's Skip, and it unlocks you. So you're basically saying a similar feature on your phone.
Look at your phone and it actually unlocks you. Now, the question is whether you can actually trick it with a photo. I'm not sure about that. There was an article I didn't get a chance to read.
They're saying no, you can't, but of course there will be limitations there. So there's probably a way you could trick it with a video, so maybe it looks for some movement and so on.
There's the Android Beam near-field communication, so Androids being able to talk to each other without Bluetooth. Bluetooth or without Wi-Fi, so that's a pretty cool concept. Now, there is visual voicemail, which is something that the iPhone's doing. Windows Phone 7 doesn't do at the moment.
I think there is the latest version of Windows Phone. I think it supports visual voicemail.
Right.
I
must live in New Zealand where none of this feature works.
Well, exactly. It's not much use here, is it? Because our networks don't support it.
And the thing that I like the most, they've overhauled the user interface to use more hardware acceleration so it doesn't run like a dog. When you look at this in the video, it's a very slick presentation.
It sounds like it's quite a major overhaul.
I think what they've done is they've taken... They've looked at a lot of the consumer concerns around the product. Potentially, this could be a phone that people would look at over an iPhone 4S.
All right, well, that's us for another week. Thank you all very much for listening in to the NZ Tech Podcast. We will be back again, of course, next week. You can find us online at nztechpodcast.com. Our Twitter handle is at nztechpodcast. We're on facebook.com/nztechpodcast. And you can find each of us on Twitter as well. Brad, your Twitter handle?
At Brad Bohr.
And Skip?
At Urban Kiwi NZ.
And my one, very easy, just my name, at Paul Spain. So thanks very much, everyone, and look forward to interacting with you guys online over the next week or so. And we'll catch you on the next episode.